Welcome to On the Brink Radio with Jeff Phillips Wefferson. This is the 10th of May. I'm on the Big Island of Hawaii. I'm really lucky to have the still alive and well, the legendary Dr. Terry, Mr. Limpet Lily, coming at us from the island of Kauai. Terry, you're still alive and well, and so am I. How the heck are you? How are you, my brother?
Actually, I've been a little bit wet the last 3 weeks since the flooding. And then been out camping the whole time because I lost my boat and my trailer where I lived in the big flood we had here in Kauai about 3 weeks ago. But other than that, I'm happy and I'm healthy, and I'm driving up and down the coastline of the North Shore of Kauai, doing my underwater movies and trying to document the damage that the flood caused here. As we had over 50 inches of rain. It was pretty wild.
Well, look, let me ask you this. Just to go back, just to rewind a little bit before the flood, the last thing I remember you really dealing with was those ducks. The ducks that were being relocated by all the new construction there, and you were going off on that and talking about the Endangered Species Act and all the stuff, and I felt bad that I didn't really have time to follow up on it, and I at that time I was really focusing on the upcoming RIMPAC and all the spate of whale and dolphin strandings that seemed to be happening everywhere in the world there for a while, and then this giant storm came, and I remember that very morning there was a massive amount of thunder and lightning here. And then I read that there was like a record rainfall. And so now you're saying over 50 inches in less than 24 hours.
Yeah, it was, it's Kauai has a lot of rain. I mean, that's kind of the bottom line. And when you live in Honolulu area, you're right below, a whole bunch of mountains, mountain peaks that go straight up 4,000 feet. So having, an average of 150 inches of rain in the Honolulu area is pretty normal. Here, and up on Mount Wiley Islay, we get sometimes up to 400 inches of rain up on top. But this last storm, as a general rule, I've gone through like four floods here in the Honolulu area now. And as a general rule, the storms come in, they hit the mountains, they hang out on the mountaintops for an hour, maybe the longest 4 to 5 hours, and then they move over the top of the mountain over to the other side of the island that's dry and happens to be where the PMRF military base is. Now, this storm stalled on top of the mountains here for almost a full 24-hour period. That's unique. I don't think anyone's ever seen that before or has ever heard of that happening. At the same time, being a biologist and being very much into the weather, because that changes nature day by day around the world. Having a storm that's that big, electrical storm, stay in the same spot for that long a time is almost not possible.
It's something like Nikola Tesla might have tried to do.
Yeah. Well, the bottom line is, if you understand weather, it's pretty simple. It's the Earth spins, and weather is, nothing more than the pressure on Earth trying to equalize itself. If the Earth wasn't spinning, we would be like Pluto or Venus. If the Earth wasn't spinning, then you would have storm systems that would stay in one place. But having a massive lightning storm not moving for 20-some-odd hours almost defies physics as far as weather patterns on the planet.
Well, let me ask you this, just to anticipate. Yesterday, when I was talking with our good friend Stuart Simonson, and he, despite all the stuff we've talked about microwaves and geophysical warfare and all this stuff, he still said that he doesn't think the military is smart enough to be able to control the weather. And I started to go like, but dude, they had atomic bombs 70 years ago. And so they haven't been sitting still. I think that the opposite is true. But is that what you're leading up to, that you think that this storm was somehow, that they possibly were manipulating it in order to keep themselves dry?
Well, there's some theories here. But for myself, not getting into theory too much, but getting into more direct observation, I've studied weather manipulation for about 20 years around the world. Lots of countries do it. They're good at it. The Chinese are pretty much more open about it than Americans are. But weather warfare, weather manipulation is something that if they haven't perfected, they do day by day, and everybody pretty much knows it. I don't think that's much of a theory anymore. Now, but just as a direct observation, we have had all of these storms since, you know, 1800 years here in Kauai. The humans have been here. And going back over records and time in Hawaiian folklore, Hawaiian mythology, all the way back through, you know, the writing of Hawaiian scripture in the Kumalipo, you know, no one has ever documented or talked of a storm behaving this way.
Really?
Now, number two, we also know for a fact that they're operating electromagnetic warfare out of the base on, you know, the east side of Kauai, at PMRF, the missile base, and up and down the coastline. We do know, because the military has been fairly open about it, that microwave and electromagnetic warfare does not work very well in an electrical storm. So they do a massive amount of microwave warfare training here. The last thing they're going to want is to have a big old electrical storm hanging out over the top of their microwave towers. We know those two things don't mix. So it would seem logical that the use of microwave warfare here is not only intense, it's been adopted by Congress, it's supported by our current president. We all know pretty much what they're doing here. They don't want an electrical storm going over the top of their microwave campaign. So this storm stopped about 5 miles away from the military base and did not get any closer and stayed there for 20 hours. Now, I don't know. I know a lot of weather people, by the way, and I don't know any of them that can explain that. Now, I want to take another step in this direction, too, is in 2015, we had something like 20 hurricanes that came and headed directly for the Hawaiian Islands. Now, not one of those hurricanes got anywhere near Kauai, and every one of those hurricanes made a right turn or a left turn or was completely obliterated by the time it got anywhere near the microwave warfare training area on the west side of Kauai. Now, there's a map that NOAA did, and what the map did in 2015 is it showed the path of all of these hurricanes in the Pacific Ocean. And do you know that there was a hurricane in 2015? Its path covered every square inch of the mid-Pacific Ocean except the west side of Kauai.
So it was like a time lapse eye of the storm that everything went around it.
Again, it got blanketed by a hurricane. You could not see the ocean in time lapse other than one little hole above the military base. So I think that people are being a little bit ignorant if they're not willing to look at and accept the type of activities they're doing out there. We know what those are. We know how dangerous they are. We know what they can do. And at the same time, we also know electromagnetic warfare testing gets canceled out by an electrical storm. And so they're not going to want that to happen.
Well, isn't it ironic? It's ironic that Nikola Tesla, whose work all this originally came from, the only place he could get large amounts of electricity for his experiments in the beginning was from lightning.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's pretty apparent, you know, the way microwave warfare works is very similar to the way the cloud seeding works. You know, they spray barium and aluminum in the clouds. We see the spraying activities all the time. We really, really, when there's a light electrical storm here, by the way, on the average electrical storm here in Kauai, at nighttime, I can lay awake and count 30 to 40 low-lying flyover by jets.
What are they doing?
Well, I don't, you know, really know. It's nighttime. But we will have an average flyover by a jet here once a month at nighttime. During an electrical storm, it's one after the next, after the next, after the next.
Very interesting.
Now, well, the Chinese have really perfected this. They use it in Beijing to control the weather. You can Google it. There's a lot of stories side. The Chinese, like I said, are pretty open about it, where if you spray barium and aluminum in the top of a cloud system, and then you blast the top of that cloud system with microwaves, it lowers the pressure of the cloud system, and you actually can control its movement by controlling where you hit it with microwaves. Well, that technology is the very technology that they've put $1 billion worth of finances into our missile base here to perfect. I mean, that's their technology. You can, anyone can read about it.
That's very, you know, so, very interesting.
Yeah, so the bottom line is, you know, the thing is, there's a lot of stuff going on. And I also want to touch on another subject, TJ, because you and I have done it a lot about the misrepresentation by the United States government and U.S. military that sea temperature changes are killing our coral reefs, because I've got a really massive study that I did on that since we talked last time.
Really?
But back to the issue here really quick about what they're doing in the military base here in Kauai. I just got done, and I sent you a copy, with a formal complaint with the U.S. military, because all of these activities of perfecting microwave warfare and underwater activities here in Kauai of using electromagnetics underwater for the purpose of testing weapons, all of these programs violate the United States Endangered Species Act and the Marine Mammal Protection Act, our two big laws here. And these are ones we're actively involved with lawsuits in right now. And, you know, we're probably going to have to threaten to sue the military again. All of the training they're doing at TMRF, the military base, was told to me 30 days ago with a meeting with the Navy, is now 100% classified by Donald Trump. All activities out there. In the past, none of the activities were classified, and the military had to inform the court system, had to inform the Native Hawaiian folks, had to inform the scientists with what they were doing out there, because they had to go through a permit system to operate this type of new weapons testing.
Does that include those permits where they would ask for a permit to take 11.5 million marine mammals, that kind of thing?
Correct. So they have to walk through a process, and this is really important for people to understand, because they're doing the same thing in Australia and off the Pacific Northwest. The way the system works here in Hawaii, because the military claims Hawaii and Kauai are part of the United States, so that's their claim. You know, us here, we may disagree with them, but that's their claim. Now, they have to follow U.S. law. Now, following U.S. law is they have to file for a permit to accidentally kill protected marine life with their weapons training. Now, the misleading part here, Jeff, is their weapons training shifted from sonar to electromagnetics in 2012. But their permitting process is they're still only getting permits to kill wildlife by the use of sonar. So they have not gone through the legal permitting process to use microwave warfare and underwater electronic weapons. And they're getting in trouble for that, is the bottom line, because we've challenged it in and out of courtrooms now. We've challenged it with our federal and state politicians. So people are catching on that the military needs to step back and go through the permit process to use this new type of weapons training here. So what they did, they finally admitted about 6 months ago, they finally admitted, the military did, that they are using these weapons above and below water, and they need to go through this federal process to get a permit to do so. Now, guess what? Right in the middle of starting that federal process, Trump classifies the entire operation, and now no one knows nothing and can do nothing about it.
Well, look, this is where you come in, because isn't it likely to assume that they're just going to keep doing exactly what they did before, but only more so?
Well, okay, now, so let's go back to World War II. The last time in the United States where something like this happened, I mean, they call it martial law, and it's where a president voids out all federal laws on behalf of the military. So that happened when Pearl Harbor got bombed, and when, it, you know, way back in the 40s, and when they were testing nuclear weapons in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, Bikini Atoll, Midway Island, all those places, they were just dropping nuclear bombs right and left with total disregard of the environment. Now, that's not supposed to happen in modern day America, that the military is supposed to follow our federal wildlife laws. Now, according to this new classification out of PMRF, they are not now following the wildlife laws, and the permitting process to go through that they're supposed to do before using these new weapon systems seems to be null and void at this point in time. So this is, I only have the ability under the U.S. Endangered Species Act to go against the military like I have in the past and been successful. This is more of a constitutional issue right now, and I don't know where it's going, Jeff. I'm kind of left out of the picture. They, military right now, I could go out and document 100 endangered sea turtles getting blown up by the military right now, and apparently I couldn't do anything about it because it's all top secret classified.
Well, look, let me ask you this. Do you know the name Ruth Caudill, C-A-U-D-I-L? Are you actually in touch with her?
Well, yeah, I'm actually doing a lawsuit with her.
Yes.
The Endangered Species Act.
Well, exactly. She told me that the U.S. Navy, according to the Endangered Species Act, that the U.S. Navy was supposed to be the ones who were supposed to enforce that.
And I know they were.
And I didn't believe it, and I asked her for that information, and she couldn't provide it, but she said you could get it from a Freedom of Information Act sent to someone, but all that stuff gets so complex. But do you think that true?
That's a true fact, okay? It's a true fact. The U.S. military in these military zones is supposed to enforce the Endangered Species Act, but if the president classifies these areas, then what that basically is saying that no one could know what they're doing there. So we have no oversight to see whether or not the Endangered Species Act is being enforced.
Yes.
Versus when the military was open about their operations here, and I was zooming around out on my research boat next to the military ships, and I documented they were killing sea turtles. Well, we had an oversight. And so, therefore, we could say to the military, which we did, you guys aren't enforcing the Endangered Species Act, and by law, you have to. And so they got caught red-handed. Well, now they've moved their military operations in a classified area where no one can go into. And they already told me that if I tried to go into these areas, that I would either get shot or my boat would be sunk. So, you know, they're very hardcore about it.
Well, let me ask you this. Does this affect RIMPAC? RIMPAC's not going to be classified, is it?
As far as I know, right now, the Navy is telling me that all military operations in Hawaiian Islands and Kauai are classified. That we can have no knowledge about what's going on. And so I'm assuming that RIMPAC probably is also. Now, once again, this is a really heavy-duty move on behalf of the United States government because it's basically taking the rights away from all of us people that live here in Hawaii and saying the military now is taking a takeover of Hawaii and you folks as private citizens have no rights left. And that's the way I looked at it legally when I was told that. Now, what Ruth is doing is a really smart move. Is Ruth did a lot of history and legal documentations about the Native Hawaiian people. The Native Hawaiian people have an agreement that was done up under the Obama administration. What Ruth has been doing, and she's done a lot of research on Native Hawaiians were given by the U.S. government through the Department of Interior, they were given under the Obama administration an agreement, okay, that they were to be involved in all federal activity here, including military activity. And so the U.S. military classifying their operations here and not letting the Native Hawaiian folks know what's going on, to me seems to be a really big violation of these treaties and agreements that have happened. And so she's really working that arena, showing that the federal government here is violating previous agreements about bringing the Native Hawaiian folks into the mixture on these type activities. So anyway, I know that that's being dealt with right now in a real hardcore way with the political folks here in Hawaii. So we'll see how that kind of pans out. But as far as me, Jeff, operating as a private citizen and enforcing the Endangered Species Act, I was told by the military that it's classified information now, and you're not gonna have access to that.
Well, I did find out that the flagship for RIMPAC is a big boat called the USS Portland, and they've mounted a brand new giant laser directed energy weapon on the bow that they're going to demonstrate.
And once again, they're violating U.S. law, because all of this stuff damages endangered and protected wildlife, and they're supposed to do a study before they do any of these type operations and go through a permit process. They're not doing that at this RIMPAC. They're not doing it currently here on a day-by-day basis. And, again, this is a real constitutional issue. Can a president take the military in the United States and override all laws? Well, that's called martial law. It hasn't been done since World War II. So, we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Well, you're our eyes and ears over there. You touched on something I was going to ask you about, some of your favorite family members, the Honu. And you just had a little. I haven't seen your whole film about that, but I saw the little trailer. But how are they doing? Yeah. Are they okay?
Well, the turtles. I'll give you the good. I'll give you the good side of the coin in the last 2 years. The very good side. And all of the news programs we've been doing, like this one, had a huge positive impact, Jeff. A very big impact. That in mid 2015, because I took video of Navy ships blowing off flippers of a bunch of sea turtles here in Kauai, and these videos went ballistic around the world. They also went to a bunch of congressional members, that the military here in Kauai agreed to meet with me, okay? And they gave me about 5 hours to present to the military brass all the damage they were doing to our marine life here in Kauai. Now, they admitted after that meeting that they have not NOT, they have not put people underwater to study the effects of their blasting, electromagnetic, plasma energy, laser beams, all their new types of weapons they're using here. And so they openly agreed that I documented that their weapon systems and what they were doing has an effect on our endangered green sea turtle. So what the military did is they openly, without a lawsuit, offered to move their naval operations and testing over 20 miles offshore. Now, did that happen? Well, in the last year and a half, Jeff, we haven't visually seen a warship, okay, near shore. And our turtles here in Kauai seem to be doing very good, by the way. And we have a whole new regrowth of coral up and down the north shore of Kauai. And really good new growth of coral. So we really do believe that the military did move offshore, and then that has led to the rebirth of our coral reef system here. So it's been a good thing all the way around.
Except for everybody that lives where they are now.
Exactly. The main concern right now, Jeff, is that they have moved apparently off the north shore of Kauai. But they moved into the Northwest Hawaiian Islands Marine Sanctuary, one of the most sensitive places on Earth for marine life. And they've also moved off the coast of Niihau and Lahua Rock. And we're seeing damage in Niihau and Lahua Rock of the military. We're suspecting there's a really lot of damage in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands. But, Jeff, we're being kept out. I can't go there. They won't let anyone go into that part of the ocean except the U.S. military. And so, frankly, we don't know what they're doing. And then now when I asked the question of the Navy 2 months ago, are you folks now becoming active again off the North Shore of Kauai? My answer back was, well, we can't talk about any of that anymore because this was all classified by the White House.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you have marine maps or some kind of satellite imagery that, in conjunction with GPS or something, that you could go out in a boat and skirt around the legal boundary of this area and then kind of look into it to see if you could see anything?
Because it's 750,000 square miles, Jeff.
Oh, really? That's huge.
Oh, it's like a quarter of the Pacific Ocean. I mean, no kidding. It's gigantic. It starts right at the apex at point, right at PMRF military base, and then it goes out at an angle and takes in the two little islands of Lahua Rock and Niihau, and then it completely pans out across the ocean and encompasses the whole Northwest Hawaiian Islands.
But isn't this international waters?
Well, put it this way. I'm not exactly sure, Jeff, on how they do that, to be honest with you, but you can Google. People can go on a U.S. military, you can in Hawaii, you can go on their webpage of the Navy, and you can go on PMRF, you know, Pacific Missile Range Facility, and they show you the map. I mean, it's right on their webpage, and the Coast Guard patrols it, and the military patrols it, and you're not allowed to get anywhere near it.
Yes.
So it's like they have a huge piece of ocean here that encompasses endangered monk seals, green sea turtles, all the whale species, the most beautiful pristine coral reefs in the world. And they're practicing all of this dangerous weaponry out there, and they're telling all of us we got to stay out. So, and once again, this is all in violation of the agreement that they had with the Native Hawaiian folks.
Well, you know what? Maybe this will take us to another topic I wanted to ask you about. Maybe it's time for us to actually get with the program and start buying some stock in Raytheon, Lockheed, and Boeing. Because after they used 58 Tomahawk missiles on Syria about a month ago, you probably saw that, the stock of Raytheon, Boeing, and Lockheed soared about 3 days later. How sick is that? I used the analogy of, like, it was like if Bjorn Borg, the tennis player, wore Reebok tennis shoes and won the tournament. It's like the biggest advert for those shoes. So this is like advertising their death technology.
Well, what's so terrible about these companies here in Kauai, and terrible about the politicians that fund them, by the way, I mean, our Senator Brian Schatz just got $2.5 billion to go into the military here. He already raised $145 million a year ago to step up the electrical grid out of PMRF military base, the exact stuff that's killing all the wildlife. Now, Raytheon and the U.S. military here in Kauai and the politicians that support them have all been trying to scare everybody here in Hawaii, saying North Korea is going to start shooting atomic weapons at us and we need to beef up the military here as an active missile base to ward off these weapons coming in from North Korea. And, you know, they're having emergency drills, and they're telling you where to go to the bunkers in Honolulu to hide underground when the nuclear weapons come in. And that was all made up. That was just all 100% bullshit, just so they can get the funding to continue their weapons training here.
Exactly, because
it's out of control. I mean, it's got to stop. It's not sustainable.
Exactly.
And And what they're doing now, Jeff, is they're trying to make Kauai so dependent on military dollars that, you know, no one can sit there and say, you know, this is illegal, the military needs to get out of here, because it would bankrupt the Hawaiian Islands.
Well, isn't the PMRF already the largest single employer there?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I was just going to say, whenever I first came, it was when that missile alert thing happened. And to me, in my mind, it looked like it was something that was engineered on purpose to do exactly what you said, to scare everybody into thinking
They already know. I think that that's been 100% proven, Jeff.
Okay.
And if you pay attention to the folks, there's a lot of information on that. The bottom line is there was a live missile.
Yes.
Incoming.
But who launched it?
That was videotaped by people right here on Kauai. So when the guy announced that there's a live missile coming in, that was a bona fide true fact. Now, who shot the missile? The latest is the guy that fired the missile from Vandenberg Air Force Base to Hawaii already testified to that. And this was all general knowledge. Is Admiral Harris, the head of the Pacific Fleet, was at PMRF that morning.
Yes.
With the head of the Japanese military.
Yes.
To show them how good our Aegis anti-missile system is, because Japanese wants to buy one from Raytheon. And so they needed to shoot down a missile and show how well the system worked. Well, apparently they did shoot the missile from Vandenberg, and they did shoot it down out of PMRF out here and showed the Japanese how well the system worked. But also apparently that they didn't inform the missile alert system folks about this, and so they panicked when they saw an incoming missile, not knowing where it was coming from. But this is the kind of stuff that they do here in disregard to the people of the Hawaiian Islands. I mean, it's just total disregard to the people that live here, and it's supported by the local politicians, and it's supported by Raytheon and McDonnell Douglas and all these big companies that make hundreds of billions of dollars, and it's supported by the U.S. military here, and it's all vastly illegal.
And do you know the word impunity?
Yeah.
They're operating with extreme impunity. They think there's nobody that can do anything to them. And I'll tell you what I think about that in a second. But look, let's talk just for a second about the we've covered this so much before, the new generation of underwater microwave stuff and all these unmanned undersea vehicles. And there's this company called Liquid Robotics that's a Boeing subsidiary that's based here on the I think it's on the Big Island somewhere or on Maui. And there's this program to map the floor of the seabed.
Yeah.
And the latest thing I saw about that is not only do they want to put multi-beam sonar equipment on all of the whole global fleet of approximately 700 geophysical research vessels, now there's a plan to put 1.5 million sonar things on all fishing boats and stuff so they can sort of network in all this data. And then that reminded me of this thing that I talked about a month ago. It stunned me. I had just learned about this guy named Walter Monk. He's like this legendary, I'm calling him a Frankenstein of the deep. He's this guy that he worked with Scripps in the Navy for 50 years, and he was involved with this project called SOSUS, S-U-S-U-S, of undersea sound surveillance network, and he had the idea of drilling a giant hole down through the Earth's crust into the mantle called Project Mohole and all this stuff. But then now DARPA has this program where they want to, it's called the Ocean of Things, and they want to somehow electromagnetically engineer all living things in the ocean to form as little transceivers or antennae that they can use the network of living beings themselves, as they can register responses from all the life forms in an area are responding to the electromagnetic presence of a drone or a submarine. They can learn that from tuning into these beings, but they've got to engineer the life forms in order to make them work properly. And isn't the, it's just, I mean, how far is all this going to go?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I just got done with a month-long trip in Indonesia, doing a coral survey and documentary movie on the coral reefs in an area called the Coral Triangle. So we know that they are doing all of this underwater electromagnetic testing off of the Hawaiian Islands here. We also know that they're doing it off with a joint venture with the Royal Australian Navy off of the Great Barrier Reef, and also with the New Zealand Navy off of New Zealand. And we also know they're doing the same underwater electromagnetic testing that you just got done talking about off the Pacific Northwest in off of Washington and Oregon. Okay, so we don't know the effects of all of what they're doing, but the bottom line is that you have heard, the world has heard, there's movies out there like the one called Chasing Coral, and this is all funded by the U.S. military, by the way. And so what the military has put out through the scientific community, all of these fake reports that the world's coral reefs are dying because of an increase in seawater temperatures. And what turns out, and Stuart's been a really big champ on this one, is what we've shown is the world's coral reefs are dying in the areas and the kelp forests where they're doing these underwater electromagnetic warfare training, not due to sea temperatures. So in order to prove this, I went up to the Coral Triangle, which starts down towards Bali and goes up to Sumatra and Borneo and then all the way up into the Philippines and then over to Irian Jaya, New Guinea, and then all the way down south to northern Australia. So this massive part of the Earth there, we did these very intense dive studies there on 13 different islands. And guess what? We found anywhere from 78 degree water temperature to 88 degree water temperature. So we found a 10 degree variation in water temperature there. And in that entire area of the Coral Triangle, we did not find hardly one damaged or diseased coral. No coral bleaching, no disease, no damage. And at the same time, I interviewed dozens and dozens of marine scientists in the area. And they all said they haven't had any coral damage there since they started their studies 30 years ago. And they're all telling me, they're going, you know, Terry, what's going on with the U.S. and Australia trying to say that a 2-degree raise in sea temperatures is killing their coral reefs? Whereas in the Coral Triangle, I also, by the way, did studies in the Caribbean, in French Polynesia, Fiji, Mauritania, Tahiti, and lots of places where our coral reefs have suffered a massive change in water temperature, even more than Hawaii, even more than the Great Barrier Reef, and all the corals are fine. So not only are they doing this extremely dangerous underwater testing, they're killing the coral reefs in the area of which they're doing it, and then they're making up stories that it's global climate change that's killing the reefs.
Well, check this out. In New Zealand, under Jacinta Ardern, they now have a new policy called the Zero Carbon Act. So now carbon is illegal in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I told him, I go, like, well, what that means is that everything that's alive has to be gotten rid of.
I know. And then at the same time, in New Zealand, as you know, all of the whale standing, the kelp forest dying in a lot of areas, all of these are the areas of this electromagnetic warfare testing. I mean, Raytheon even put out on their webpage all the testing that they're doing between New Zealand and Australia. And they say right on their webpage that they are going to control the oceans with their electromagnetics. I mean, you know, it's out of control, and us biologists that are running around the planet are over and over and over and over showing that the major damage we're having to our marine life is in the areas of these underwater electronic warfare testing activities.
Yes, and this is probably one of your single most important contributions to in all the different interviews we've done is to create awareness about this. You know, you've witnessed, you've not only witnessed the effects of this, you've actually been almost taken out yourself by interaction with artificial electromagnetic fields, and
all the way to the point of doing an entire series on this issue itself. I mean, the series name, it was going to be on National Geographic, and the series name is called Reef Madness. And it was a year-long underwater series about all these crazy activities going on here in Kauai and the Hawaiian Islands with the military and other factors that are damaging our marine life. We shot this entire series. National Geographic voted it. It was one of their top new television series coming up. And then Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox News, bought National Geographic and canceled the series.
So where does all that stand now? And is there any way that I can see those?
The series is actually owned by myself and the company that produced it in Santa Barbara, California.
What are they called?
What's
that company called?
It's called On the Wave Productions.
Okay.
And they're good friends of mine. We all work together. We all have our nonprofit together, by the way. And so we're at the point here where we're potentially going to re-release the series to a different network. And it's not my, I'm not the one that has to say so on that. I'm the biologist in the series. But the people that own it and filmed it are very close friends of mine.
Is this the guy that handles your video footage and stuff?
Yeah, he's one of the ones that handles my video footage. I've got several of them.
Well, I need to talk with you more about that later.
Yeah, he also does movies for the Weather Channel and Discovery Channel. He's a very well-known documentary filmmaker. And so we've been talking quite a bit lately on how we're going to bring this out forward.
Well,
we have done communication with Netflix and BBC and different places. So there is a possibility of it coming out. The main thing is, Jeff, is that when you have something like this that exposes the power of the U.S. military, when you get it out there,
yes,
you want to get it out to a lot of people, like, really fast.
Yes, exactly.
So it's got a good distribution before the military can step over the plate and try to squash it?
Exactly. Well, look, let me ask you this. Is there a possibility that do you have finished copies of all of these?
I don't have all the finished copies with me, just some prototypes.
Well, is there any way that you could put some of those up on something like Vimeo or Dailymotion, but don't make it public. Just make it so that no one can see it unless you send them a passcode.
And then, they already are, because that's the way we've shared them with all of the different TV networks worldwide.
Can you send me those links?
It's not my, I don't have that power to do that. All I can do is just ask the producers if they're ready to open it up like that.
Well, but only to me. I wouldn't share it with anybody else.
Well, unless you have $100 million in the bank to fund the series.
Well, no, but I'm helping with all this.
I understand, but Jeff, it's kind of a different deal. What I've learned, I've done a lot of TV work in the past, and for instance, like when I have a series coming up on National Geographic on Go Wild. It may be out any day. It's on Shark Week. I have zero rights to the marketing of that footage. That these major television productions are—it's an entire industry around when and where they release some of this stuff, and I just simply don't get involved with it yet.
But do you trust these people 100%?
Yeah. Yeah, I very much trust them, and I have a contract with them and stuff.
But how about this? You know how devious the military can be. They can create all kinds of front and intermediate organizations that looks like an environmental organization, but it's really them. And they do a lot of stuff that way.
I understand that. I understand that. But this stuff isn't going to go forward without my permission. And, you know, we're not working with anyone that's off the grid at this point in time.
Yes.
Just the regular TV networks and doing other shows for these TV networks. And so I really can't, I'm not at a place or a point in time where I can answer those questions for you, Jeff.
Yes, because we both know that everybody loves the happy beings of the sea, turtles, whales, dolphins,
yeah,
fish, sharks, everything. But when it comes to dealing with the reality of what the real threats to them are, if it's not a convenient bogey or scapegoat that you can point your finger at, like the evil Japanese fishermen or the whalers or climate change, if it's not that, if it's anything real like the oil industry, deep seabed mining, anything military, that's when the problems come in.
Well, you put it this way. Just look at the news here in Kauai and Hawaiian Islands right now. All of the politicians, all of the folks in the DLNR and our enforcement agencies, the wildlife agencies, are all celebrating and having parties and doing news stories because they banned sunscreen. They say they're saving the coral reefs in Hawaii because they banned this chemical in sunscreen. Well, the bottom line is over 125 dive sites that I dive at throughout the Hawaiian Islands, there's only one of them that even remotely has a problem with this chemical in the sunscreen. I mean, it's in legal terms, it's called a red herring. That this chemical in sunscreen absolutely can kill corals, but the thing is, it doesn't build up enough in the ocean where tourists are to harm the coral reefs.
It's like comparing the destructiveness of a match with a stick of dynamite.
With a stick of dynamite.
Compared to the sunscreen versus the microwaves.
Yep. So what they do is they put out all of this reporting that they're saving all of the coral reefs in Hawaii by banning sunscreen, but they're not even willing to approach or look at the fact that the military has killed, you know, hundreds of miles of entire coastline with their activities, and they won't touch that with a 10-foot pole because the military gives Hawaii so much money.
Exactly.
That's just the bottom line fact.
It's part of the insanity of the modern mental operating environment.
How do you break that cycle? If you look at the elections, so we have governor elections and Congress people and all that kind of stuff all coming up here in November. Now, if you want to pay attention to every politician running in the Hawaiian Islands, every single one of them, not one of them has even said, we want to protect the ocean and marine life. Not one. And this is in Hawaiian Islands. It makes most of their money on tourism. For people here coming to see the ocean and marine life.
Well, you know what? Their actual motto is making Hawaii safe for RIMPAC.
Yeah. I mean, put it this way. They've sold out to the U.S. military. They don't touch anything around the environment, so the military can do whatever they want to do here. And all they talk about is making more affordable housing or better roads. I mean, it's unreal. There is no money from tourist agencies. Hawaii has the largest amount of tourism right now it's ever had in its history. We have something called the Hawaii Tourist Authority. Massive amount of taxes on tourist dollars coming into Hawaii. Hotel, bed and breakfast taxes, everything. And not one penny of that goes back into the study or protection of our marine life here. So, I mean, it's just unreal. And so, once again, our only kind of hope right now is these agreements that were made by the United States government and the Native Hawaiian community and the Hawaiian kingdom here. And we're really pushing hard to have those agreements upheld. And that's about the only way we're being able to fight some of these problems with the military here.
Well, see, but that's why you're such a singularly important person in your all the different stuff that you're able to do and what you're willing to do and the perspective that you can share and create visually and through your underwater photography and your love of the ocean and your willingness to talk about all this stuff. That's why you're the fountainhead of the light that's still shining about.
Well, the one thing that I've been able to do, and I'm very proud and happy to do it, I just highly respect the Native Hawaiian culture here, and I was raised in, you know, a similar culture that had a very intimate relationship with the ocean. And the Native Hawaiian people have taken care of the Hawaiian Islands in a sustainable way for 1,800 years. And we need to get back to that if there's going to be an environmental future of Hawaii. And if Hawaii is just going to be a wasteland, you know, because of the military. And so what I've been able to do, just because of having modern day cameras and scuba diving and all that kind of stuff, at least I've been able to document a lot of the problems with our marine life at the hands of the military and corporate America here, chemical companies and development companies, and supply that to the Native Hawaiian folks so they have some tools to use. Like I said, our real hope at this point in time is, for me, is shifting away from science being able to be used with U.S. law, like the Endangered Species Act, because the current administration is, you know, pushing those laws to the wayside here.
Yes.
And so all I can say is it's an interesting time right now, and we'll see what the next few months bring.
Yes.
And one thing that I will have to say that's really cool, Jeff, is here in on the island of Kauai, that we have Native Hawaiians now that are running for political office, and they're challenging the military, and they're challenging corporate America, and they're challenging the big developers. And it's really a wonderful thing to see.
Yes.
So this stuff is coming out way more into the public light minute by minute.
Yes.
And so I think all of that's a really, really, really good step forward.
Well, guess who's also potentially battling against the U.S. military?
Yeah, who?
Pele.
Yeah, I know.
What if she's just had enough of all this stuff? And all the eruptions and stuff that we're seeing here now are really just the beginning of what she might take out.
There's a lot of cultures around the world, a lot of indigenous cultures that have prophecies that say that Mother Nature and the Earth is going to get tired of human beings here pretty soon and raise up and say enough is enough. And when you see the fires happening in California, you know, and the flooding happening here in Kauai, and Madam Pele warming up the environment over there on the Big Island, I tend to like it. I think Mother Nature needs to rise up here and clean off the surface of a lot of the earth of these really evil activities that human beings are doing.
These invasive parasites.
Yeah, I hear you 100%. And so maybe that's what's happening here. And, you know, it's the earth can only take so much. And the U.S. military, in my opinion, is the biggest destructive force on earth.
Absolutely. And of that, the U.S. Navy has probably more nuclear reactors than anybody else.
Oh, gosh. I mean, they're the inventors of every new weapon system on earth that could destroy earth and everything here. So we'll see how it all pans out. But the one thing about it is the old saying, you can't fool Mother Nature, I think, is still holding into it. And for people, for me, ever since I've been a little kid, Jeff, it's been a no-brainer for me because I've lived in nature. And that's where I choose to live instead of in a modern-day housing development, you know? But the bottom line is people all around the world are realizing you can't build homes in a wetland. You don't want to build homes in a floodplain. You don't want to build homes and businesses on a beach, and you don't want to build homes and businesses on an active volcano.
Exactly. But how many have?
A lot of people, and there's a lot of wealth that's been put into those areas. You just wait, Jeff, too. What if we see in our lifetime if the big chunk of land on Kilauea Volcano on the Puna side, USGS is all a well studied and well documented potential event. That whole piece of land is ready to fall off into the ocean.
The Hylena Slump. I saw that video. Hey, let me just, we're getting down close to the end of the hour here. Let me just close with this. I wanted to ask you more about that, but I've been in touch with some of the astronomers at the Keck Observatory, and they're building an infrared spectrometer to study this comet called Wirtanen, W-I-R-T-A-N-E-N, that's going to pass in December. It's going to be within 30 lunar distances of the Earth, and it's going to be visible to the naked eye. It's not huge, massively huge, but I think that Mother Earth might have some assistance in getting rid of us coming from outside the solar system. And when I was just in Alice Springs in August, I was invited to paint the largest mural that I've done in Australia. It was the rainbow serpent, you know, the sacred guardian being. And what I painted was the sister of the rainbow serpent. The story was that the rainbow serpent, who's the guardian being of Mother Earth and represents the energies flowing through the Earth, she was so sad and fed up and tired of dealing with what our species is doing that she called her sister, who's been visiting in the Pleiades. She called her sister and asked her to come back to Earth to help fight the good fight, and so she's here now.
Like I said again, almost every indigenous culture has a very deep connection with nature, and in almost all of their religions, and prophecies have the very same time frame coming up soon of a cleansing of this planet and getting back in balance and harmony with nature. And, you know, we're seeing it all across the planet in every direction. So all I do is I sit back with kind of a smile on my face, and I just sit there and I say, all is as it should be, and let it roll.
Yes, well, the Hopi Native Americans say that they call it the Day of Purification, and it was really interesting. I did a major post on April 26th because that was the 32nd anniversary of the Chernobyl meltdown, where I was actually on the Hopi and Navajo reservation at that time learning about the Hopi prophecy when that meltdown happened, and it was a very incredible synchronicity in my life. But they say that they call them the people of one heart, all the people, and maybe of all the different kingdoms of life, the people of one heart of all the kingdoms of life will be somehow magically able to find each other and be in the right place at the right time as all these cataclysmic and catastrophic events happen, and maybe some will be able to survive to be the seeds of the new creation.
Well, let me just tell you one really, really, really quick story. In the Honolulu flood down here, I live in the boatyard, and there's a trailer down there that I live in, and we had 14 feet of water come through the boatyard. Everything got pretty much destroyed, and that trailer, I was ready to move back. I had lost my boat that I was living on. It's a long story, and I was ready to move all of my stuff back into the boatyard because I'm doing a current study down there, you know, on the Kahlua ducks and the other animals. And so I have a lot of my gear down there, my research boats down there, and a lot of my gear and a lot of my stuff. And I was going to move all my electronics, movies, hard drives, myself down into the boatyard area for a period of time. Well, I all of a sudden I got this call to go over to Oahu and stay with a friend, and at the same time finish up some underwater filming for a National Geographic special. And I thought, okay, great, this is great timing. So I fly to Oahu, I take all of my computers, hard drives, cameras, everything, and that night it flooded in the boatyard, and if I would have been there, I'd have been dead.
Oh, my God. Well, see, but that's a perfect example of the guardian angel higher guidance at work, because I was also supposed to come over there. Remember how hard I tried to make it work for me to be there, and it wasn't meant to happen at this time. And what if I was on the boat and I got washed out? I mean,
I invited you to come on down and stay in the boatyard to see all of this stuff firsthand.
I know.
And get this one. I have never, in the past three floods, I've never left the boatyard because the highest amount of water coming through has only been about 5 feet. And I have my underwater housing and my wetsuit on, and I can sit up on top of the trailer if I need to.
Yes.
Well, this one washed away my research boat. The trailer rolled all the way down to the beach and was filled with water and mud.
Oh, my God.
So, Yeah, it would have been history if I was there. So
I would have had to grow some flippers like you. But Terry, let me close this radio show because we're a little over the time limit now. This is I've got to sign off now. This is Jeff Weverson thanking you for listening with the illustrious and legendary Terry, Mr. Limpet Lily. We'll be doing another interview soon, but this is Jeff Weverson signing out for On the Brink Radio.